Welcome to Stories from Palestine podcast, a podcast recorded in Palestine and about Palestine. My name is Crystal, I studied history and tour guiding, and I live in Palestine with my Palestinian husband and children. I started this podcast during the COVID pandemic in the summer of 2020, and now that tourism is slowly coming back to Palestine, I will continue the podcast bi-weekly. So subscribe on your podcast player and turn on the notifications if you want to be reminded of new episodes. You can also follow Stories from Palestine on Facebook and Instagram, where I will share a virtual soundbite of each new episode. Hi, everyone, and I'm sorry for having you kept waiting for a new episode for 3 weeks. But as I said in social media and maybe also in a previous episode, I had my exam, finally, the exam for the Palestinian Ministry of Tourism. And it was last weekend. On Saturday, we had the written exam. And on Monday, we had the oral exam. And yeah, there were about 100 participants. They have studied in different schools, in the Bible College the way I did, and then in the Dar al-Kalima College and in the Bethlehem University. And because there hasn't been an exam for about 4 years, there were a lot of people who studied in the last 4 years, and there were also some tour guides who wanted to upgrade their category, because for the Palestinian Ministry, you choose whether you want to do an exam just for one location, like the Church of Nativity, for example, or for Bethlehem District, or for the West Bank. But I chose to do the general exam. So I studied for many, many weeks. I had been studying all the time. And, you know, I'm creating the podcast, doing a lot of interviews. But to study for an exam is different. So I studied for about 3-4 weeks really hard. And then, yeah, I finally did it. And I was lucky because the first question was about Tel Marisha, which is Beit Jibrin. And I did a podcast episode about that, and it's one of my favorite places here. So that was easy. There was a question about Akka, and I did visit it and studied it well. So I had my answers ready. There was also about the Carmel Caves, which is Wadi Mughara. And you know, I love caves. So I did also know how to write a lot about the caves. There was a question about Gaza, actually. They had an archaeological site mentioned in Tel Amr in Gaza, where they found the remains of the first monastery ever set up by Saint Hilarion in the 4th century. And the other questions, I think I also did it well. And then on the oral exam, I was a little bit nervous, but I was also quite comfortable because I have experience in front of groups. And there were several questions that were easy to answer. And there were several questions that were a little bit tricky, but I think that I managed to give them enough information and show them that I have the capacity to be a good tour guide. So we will have to wait for several weeks until we get the results. And then it may still take some time until we have the actual license in our hands. In the meantime, I also started studying for the tour guide program in Jerusalem, the one that I did a crowdfunding for, and that I decided to do in the summer when we still didn't know when the Palestinian exam was going to be. And I did sign up for it. I had to do an interview. I was accepted. Out of 90 people, they took only 45. And then I paid for it. And then the exam for the Palestinian Ministry was finally announced. But then I said, well, you know what? Maybe it's good to also hear another narrative and to have a license that allows me to work all over historic Palestine. I have to admit that the first two meetings, I didn't find it as easy. The coordinator of the program was very clear about it. We are going to learn the Zionist perspective, because that is what the Ministry of Tourism in Israel wants you to know, and that's what they will ask you about in the final exam for the license. So we're going to have to wrestle ourselves through a narrative that I not necessarily appreciate, but that is probably good to know and to understand also. So I'll keep you updated on that. We have our first excursion coming up on Sunday. And yeah, I mean, I am excited about learning a lot more from specialists and archaeologists and going to all these different places. We're going to make 60 different day trips. So that is quite exciting. For today's episode, I wanted to talk about the name Palestine. We never actually talked about that. And I feel that a lot of people find it actually hard or difficult to use the word Palestine. They are confused. Should I say Israel? Should I say Palestinian territories? Should I say the West Bank? Somehow using the word Palestine, I guess, especially in the last decades, has been kind of demonized. And people are not sure if it's appropriate to use the word. They maybe also associate the word Palestine and Palestinians with politics, maybe with violence, because that's the only thing they hear through their mainstream media. So I guess the word Palestine, unfortunately, has gotten a negative connotation. There's a very good book written by Nur Masalha, and it's called Palestine, A 4,000-Year History. And this book describes the history and the use of the name Palestine from the very earliest references that were found in Egyptian and in Assyrian texts up until today. And I used this book to prepare this podcast episode. In his book, he also emphasizes that geographic names are very important and they were often changed when new rulers came into the land. And then they wanted to leave their imprint of their presence on the land, so they used different names and they changed names for cities. Sometimes they changed names for provinces. But the name Palestine has been commonly used for the region for more than 3,000 years. And it is interesting how today there is such a strong attempt to erase that memory. There's also that great effort of spreading the myth that Palestine was a land without a people, for a people without a land, a very typical Zionist myth. And when Israel was established as a state in 1948, it wasn't an empty land. It wasn't a land where just some Bedouins roamed and where some nomadic people lived. There were cities, towns, there was harbors on the coast, there even was an airport, there was a whole train network with Palestinian railways, there were cinemas and theaters where people used to go out, there was newspapers, there was a Palestinian currency, the Palestinian pound, people used to have a Palestinian passport, there were Palestinian postal stamps to send mail to other parts of the world, and there was a population of about 2 million people living here. Another typical Zionist myth is that there was never a Palestine, there were never any Palestinians, that the national identity and nationalism of Palestinians was only formed later after the establishment of the State of Israel. So they claim that there were some Arabs and Bedouins that were living in the area, roaming around with their flocks, but they didn't have a national identity. They didn't have a real connection to this land in particular. And that comes in very handy. Something Zionists will often say is, well, we only have one country, but the Arabs can move to 22 Arabic-speaking countries. And I don't know, like as if these countries would happily accept the Palestinians to move there. And I mean, it's also a really strange thing to say. Imagine somebody told me that, hey, you're from the Netherlands, you speak Dutch. Well, in Belgium, they also speak Dutch, so you can just go and live there. Yeah, it's true. They also, I mean, they speak Flemish and it's very similar to Dutch. But me, I don't know anybody in Belgium. I don't have any history there. I don't have any ties there. I do not maybe relate to their customs, their habits, their traditions. I don't understand their sense of humor. We don't share any common history or any similar experiences. So to say, oh, the Arabs who live in Israel can just move to any other of the 22 Arabic countries, that is definitely saying that, well, you don't have any heritage here, you don't have any identity here, you can just pick up your stuff and move. So the main issue is that Zionists will deny that these Arabs, as they call them, so they don't call them Palestinians, they call them Arabs, that they have any heritage here, that they have a long connection to the land, that they share traditions together, culture, food, music, dance, the embroideries, the storytelling, which is, by the way, on UNESCO World Heritage List, the Hikaya, the Palestinian-style storytelling. So it is recognized by UNESCO. So they deny all of that, that the Palestinians have roots in the land and that they have knowledge of the land through centuries and centuries of family ties and generations. And in a future episode that I will be recording later in December with Bassem, who is the producer of a podcast that I highly recommend. It's called Pre-Occupation, a not-so-short history of Palestine. I want to talk to him more about this issue of the Palestinian identity and how it was shaped. But for now, I will focus on the name Palestine. The name Palestine is the most commonly used name for the region from the late Bronze Age onward until basically the British Mandate. So that is from around 1300 BC. There are some other names that can be found in ancient texts for the region. For example, the Egyptians speak about Jahi and about Retenu. And later, Jahi and Retenu are replaced by the word Canaan. And we read the name Canaan and Canaanites in the Bible books and also in the Amarna letters. And the Amarna letters were correspondence on clay tablets written in cuneiform, which was written with a small wooden wedge that they would imprint on clay and then the clay would dry up. And it's correspondence between the Egyptian pharaoh and the vassal kings of the city-states in the region that was called Canaan. And the people who lived in the region were multiple different groups of people. They were different tribes, and they were all called Canaanites, or the inhabitants of Canaan. They were the indigenous population. Some of them were settled, others were living a more pastoral or nomadic life, taking their flock around the land for grazing. And there are scholars who say that, for example, the Philistines and the Israelites that we read about in the Bible were Canaanites. Just as, for example, the Moabites and the Ammonites, each had their own cultural identities, but they were ethnically all considered Canaanites. And there are also scholars who link the Canaanites to the Phoenicians. The Phoenicians lived on the coastal area of what is today Lebanon. Their main port cities were Tyre and Sidon. And the Phoenicians were known for the purple dye that they produced. They used a mollusk, a sea snail, that they cooked in a specific way to extract the purple color. And it was a hard and difficult job. First, you had to find enough snails to make enough purple dye. And then you had to do all this process. And the purple color was not found easily in nature. So it became used mainly for the robes of the royal family members. It was considered a royal color because it was not very much available and therefore it was very expensive. And some scholars make a link to the Akkadian word kinahu that was used for this purple dye, and it sounds a little bit like Canaan, kinahu, Canaan. So they make the suggestion that the Canaanites were much related to the Phoenicians. But we're not going to talk about the name Canaan. We're going to talk about the name Palestine that replaced the earlier names of the region. Now, the root letters of the word Palestine are P-L-S-T. And the first time that we see these root letters are in Egyptian sources in the Medinet Habu Temple, dating to around 11,850 before Christ. This is when Pharaoh Ramses III reigned Egypt. And the word is pronounced as Peleset, and it was used to refer to the people in the southern Levant. And in the southern Levant, there were more people living. There is a stele called the Merneptah stele, where some other peoples of the Levant are mentioned, such as the Shardana, the Ekwesh, the Teresh, Cheker, the Luca, the Geta, the Amor, and the Shaus. And of course, the Philistines. And this word Philistine is related to Peleset. So now we're going to trace how Peleset developed into Palestine. From the 8th and 7th century before Christ, we have the Assyrians, a big empire that also conquered the region, and they referred to the southern coastal region as Palashtu or Pilistu. It literally meant the land of the Peleset. And when they wrote Palashtu or Piliste or even Pilistia, they didn't only refer to the well-known cities, the five big cities, the Pentapolis, that were Gaza, Ekron, Gath, Ashdod, and Ascalon, but it was used also for the interior country, for the mountain region. So generally for the whole area between Lebanon and Egypt. And the well-known trade route, the Via Maris, the way of the sea that connected Egypt up to the north with the area of Damascus, it was also known as the way of the Philistines. So the name Canaan was only used for a limited period in the late Bronze Age time, and then Peleset, Philistia, and eventually Palestina became the most used name for the region. Let's move to the Hellenistic period. So we're now in the 5th, 4th century before Christ. And in early classical literature of Greek writers, especially Herodotus and Aristotle, we see the name Palestina appearing. Herodotus was a contemporary of Socrates, and Herodotus is often called the father of history. He was the first historian to systematically investigate historical subjects. He would arrange materials into a historical narrative. And one of the most famous historical texts that he wrote is called Histories. And it is still studied by all history students and academics around the world today. In this classical text that is written in the 5th century before Christ, the Histories, Herodotus talks about Palestine, Palestina, Syria, and the Syrians of Palestine. He distinguishes the Phoenicians from the Syrians of Palestine. And when he uses these terms, he doesn't not only refer to the coastal strip between the Carmel Mountain and Gaza, but to the whole interior of the country. And the reason why also Nur Masalha in his book emphasizes on that is because today, a lot of the Zionist narrative says that there were Philistines, they were sea peoples that came from abroad, and they lived in the coastal area for a while, and then they disappeared in history. So they're trying to focus on the fact that the word Palestine was only used for just a small part of the region. But we see in these ancient texts that the word Palestine is used for a much bigger area. Herodotus visited Palestine himself, and according to his own words, he traveled extensively through the part of Syria called Palestine. And then he refers to Palestine, Syria, or simply Palestine, many times. It is written as Palestine in his book. Of course, in the Greek letters, in the Greek language, so it is transliterated. And he writes about it as an area comprising the whole region between Phoenicia and Egypt. In his book Histories, Herodotus never mentions Judea. He does also not mention Canaan or the Canaanites or the Israelites. And also he doesn't speak about monotheism in the country, which is interesting. And also archaeological evidence shows that monotheism was actually a much later development in Palestine and the Near East. And many of the Old Testament religious and ideological dogmas evolved only centuries after Herodotus lived in the 5th, 4th century before Christ. About a century after Herodotus, the Greek scientist and philosopher and historian Aristotle also talks about Palestine. And he also does not mention the term Canaan. So it seems that the term Canaan by that time was not in use anymore. I will quote a paragraph from his famous work, Meteorology, which was written in 340 BC. Quote, again, if, as is fabled, there is a lake in Palestine, such that if you bind a man or a beast and throw it in it, it floats and doesn't sink. This would bear out what we've said. They say that this lake is so bitter and salt that no fish live in it, and that if you soak clothes in it and shake them, it cleans them. End of quote. So this is written by Aristotle, and it is widely understood now by scholars that this is a reference to the Dead Sea, obviously. Another important scholar of the Hellenistic world is the writer and cartographer Claudius Ptolemaeus, also called Ptolemy, who lived in the 2nd century AD. He produced a world map, the Ptolemy map, on which he clearly distinguished between the Coele Syria, Phoenicia, and Palestina. So this distinction that Ptolemy made on his map between these three countries, Palestina, Phoenicia, and Coele Syria, this had a large impact on future historians and future geographers and travelers and cartographers, because they would produce similar distinctions of the division of the region. Now, continuing in history, during the Roman rule in Palestine, and especially in the period between 135 and 390 AD, Palestine became one of the provincias of the Roman Empire. And by this time, the name Palestine was already more than 1,000 years old. It had been in use for over 1,000 years, and it was consolidated and popularized in the Latin and in the Greek languages, which were the two most spoken languages of the Roman Empire and the Eastern Mediterranean. A Roman provincia was the largest territorial and administrative unit of the Roman Empire. There were minor provinces, smaller ones, and then there were major provinces. And in 135 AD, the Roman Emperor Hadrian officially combined the minor Roman province of Iudea with the old Philistia and the Galilee in the north and Idumea in the south. And all of these smaller provinces together then formed a new major province that he called Syria Palestina. Now, we often hear from the Zionist perspective that Hadrian did this after the revolt of the Jewish people in Jerusalem as a punishment to the Jewish people, and that he chose to use the word Palestine because of the Old Testament narratives of the struggles between the Israelites, the Jews, and the Philistines. But with this narrative, they completely ignore that the name Palestine had been a common name commonly used for over 1,000 years in the region, and that Hadrian probably chose it because in both Greek and in Latin writings, it was the popular name used for the area. Now, during much of this period of the Roman Provincia Palestina, Jerusalem was one of the two administrative and cultural centers of the country, with the seat of the Roman governor and the seat of the royal court. And the other important city of the Roman Provincia Palestina was Caesarea, also called Caesarea Maritima, to distinguish it from Caesarea Philippi, and also referred to in many texts as Caesarea Palestina. The name of Jerusalem, by the way, in that time was not Jerusalem. If you listen to my episode about the many names of the city of Jerusalem, you can know that the name of Jerusalem at that time was Alia Capitolina. Alia, after the second name of Hadrian, Alius, and Capitolina was dedicated to Jupiter Capitolinus, who was the chief god of the Roman state religion. The name Jerusalem almost became extinct, and Alia Capitolina was the common name for the city until the first Muslim period, in which they Arabized Alia Capitolina and they called it Ilia. And it was still used as Ilia in some of the medieval Arabic sources in the 10th century. And then we start to see a change from Ilia to Beit al-Maqdis, the House of Holiness. And from Beit al-Maqdis, then it changes into Al-Quds. And that's why Palestinians today still call it Al-Quds. But you can listen to back to that episode I did about the names of Jerusalem. Now, in the course of time, in the Roman era, this longer name of the Provincia Syria Palestina became simply Palestina. And this term, Palestina, can then be found in many works of important Roman writers, such as Strabo and Pliny the Elder, and also classical Jewish authors like Flavius Josephus and Philo of Alexandria. They all use the term Palestina. Continuing in history, we are arriving to the Christian Byzantine time, and the Byzantines created three administrative provinces that were called Palestina Prima, Palestina Secunda, and Palestina Tertia. The capital of Palestina Prima was Caesarea. The capital of Palestina Secunda was Scitopolis, also known as Bisan. And the capital of Palestina Tertia was Petra. So for many centuries, the name Palestina remained being used for these Byzantine provinces. And then in 638, when Omar ibn al-Khattab arrived to the region with his Muslim army and they conquered the land from the Byzantines, they started using the name Palestina. But because in Arabic there is no P, you will often hear that they pronounce the P more as a B, or in this case, it was changed into an F. So instead of Palestine, it became Palestine. And that is why Arabs will say Palestine instead of Palestine or Palestine. The new Islamic rulers that arrived here in the 7th century divided the region that they conquered into five districts or five provinces. And they called them Ajnad, or that's plural, in single it's Junt. So there were five governors. There was a governor for Junt Damask. There was a governor for Junt Philistine, Junt al-Urdun, Junt Hims, and Junt Kinasarin. Five governors, five provinces, and one of them was called Junt Philistine. So we keep seeing the name Philistine, Palestine being used. The capital of Junt Philistine was initially Lod, a city that still exists today. And it gave its name to the first airport of Palestine. Later, under the State of Israel, it became known as the Ben-Gurion Airport, but it was officially a Lod airport. But when Sulaiman ibn Abdul Malik, the son of the caliph who built the Dome of the Rock, decided to build a new city close to Al-Lod, the city of Ramla, Ramla became the capital of Junt Philistine. Ramla, by the way, is the only city that was built completely new in the first Arabic Islamic Muslim time. And you can learn more about Ramla and Lod in the second part of the episode I recorded on the way from Jerusalem to Jaffa, it's called. Junt Philistine was the richest province of the region. And I will quote from a historian and geographer called Al-Maqdisi, from his very well-known book, The Best Divisions for the Knowledge of the Regions, what he wrote about Palestine. He writes in the 10th century, and he writes about the agricultural produce and the manufactured goods of Palestine. And I quote, "Within the province of Palestine may be found, gathered together, 36 products that are not found, thus united in any other land. From Palestine come olives, dried figs, raisins, the carob fruit, stuffs of mixed silk and cotton, soap, and kerchiefs. From Jerusalem come cheeses, cotton, the celebrated raisin of the species known as Ainuni and Duri, excellent apples, bananas, which same is a fruit in the form of a cucumber, but when the skin is peeled off, The interior is not unlike the watermelon, only finer flavored and more luscious. Also pine nuts, known as courage bite, and their equal is not found elsewhere. Further, mirrors, lamp jars and needles. From Jericho is brought excellent indigo. From Sourar and Baysan came indigo and dates and rice. Also, the treacle called dibbis. From Amman, grain, lambs and honey. From Tiberias, carpet stuffs, paper and cloth. From Kadas, clothes of the stuff called munayir and balaisia. Also, ropes. End of quote. In the periods that follow, the Crusader period, the Ayyubid period, the Mamluk and Ottoman periods, the name Palestine appears on several Arab and Venetian world maps. You can read more about that in the book of Nur Masalha, Palestine, a 4,000-year history. The name Philistine is also mentioned by writers such as Yaqut al-Hamawi. He writes in the 13th century, and he writes, and I quote, "Philistine is the last of the provinces of al-Sham towards Egypt. Its capital is Jerusalem. Of the principal towns are Ascalon, Ramla, Gaza, Arsuf, Caesarea, Nablus, Ariha, Amman, Jaffa, and Beit Jibrin." End quote. Under the Mamluks, who started their rule in 1260, the Bilad-e-Sham region was divided into six larger administrative provinces, each one called a mamlakat. This literally means kingdom. And the six provinces under the Mamluks were Damascus, Aleppo, Hamat, Tripoli, which is modern Lebanon, Karak, which is Transjordan, and then Safat, which is part of Palestine. Safat, a town in the north of Palestine, became the regional capital in Palestine for the first time in history under the Mamluks, and it remained the capital of northern Palestine for several centuries. When the Ottomans came in 1516, they changed the name of the administrative province of Safat from Mamlakat Safat to Sanjak Safat. They divided the provinces into military administrative centers, and they were called Sanjak. The area of Sanjak Safat included modern-day Galilee, the Marj bin Amr Valley, or the Jizrael Valley, including the towns of Al-Lajun and Jenin, and also some of the area in the north that is today considered to be South Lebanon. That was Sanjak Safat under the Ottomans. Back to the 14th century, under the Mamluks, the name Philistine was cited by Arab and Muslim travelers, often also in connection with the city of Ramla, which was the former capital of Jund Philistine province. And I want to read something from the most famous Muslim traveler, Ibn Battuta. He was a scholar from North Africa who traveled through most of the Muslim world, and he visited Palestine in the summer of 1326. And he writes, and I quote, "I journeyed thereafter from Jerusalem, Al-Quds, to the fortress of Ascalon, which is a total ruin. Of the great mosque known as the Mosque of Omar, nothing remains but its walls and some marble columns of matchless beauty, partially standing and partially fallen. Amongst them is a wonderful red column of which the people tell that the Christians carried it off to their country but afterwards lost it when it was found at its place at Ascalon. Thence I went on to the city of Ramla, which is also called Philistine. In the Qibla of those mosques, they say, 300 of the prophets are buried. From Ramla I went to the town of Nablus, a city with an abundance of trees and perennial streams, and one of the richest in Asham for olives, the oil of which is exported thence to Cairo and Damascus. It is at Nablus that the carob sweet is manufactured and exported to Damascus and elsewhere. Nablus has also species of melon, which is called by its name a good and delicious fruit. Thence I went to Ajalun, passing through the Ghawr, followed the coast to Akka, which is in ruins. Akka was formerly the capital and port of the country of the Franks, the Crusaders, and it rivaled Constantinople itself. So this is a description of Palestine in 1326. But also other local writers and historians keep using the term Philistine when they write about their native country in the Mamluk and in the Ottoman time. And you can read a lot of examples of that in the book of Nurma Salha. Under the Ottoman Empire, which lasted from 1517 for 400 years until 1917, Palestine was used as a general term to describe the Arab-Muslim country in the southern Sham region. Well, mainly Arab-Muslim. Of course, there were also Christians, but Muslims were definitely the majority. The word Palestine was also used among the indigenous people of Palestine as a social and cultural term, but Palestine was not an official designation under the Ottomans, and some Arabs during this period referred to the area as a Sham. Some historians claim that the term Palestine was entirely forgotten by local Arabs during the Ottoman period, and that it was only brought back by the Arab Christians who were in touch with Europe in a later period. But there are several leading Palestinian Muslim jurists and writers who keep using the term Philistine when they refer to the country. There are several examples in the book, such as Khari ad-Din al-Ramli and Mujir al-Din al-Ulami, and also the writer Salih ibn Ahmed al-Tumurtashi. He writes in the 17th century a book that is called The Complete Knowledge and Remembering the Holy Land and Its Boundaries and Remembering the Land of Palestine and Its Boundaries and Asham. It's quite a long title. I don't expect anybody to remember that, but he does use the word Palestine when he refers to the Holy Land. And in his book, he uses the terms Philistine and the land of Palestine, the people of Palestine, the boundaries of Palestine, the memory of Palestine, when he describes his own country. In the 19th century, we see that more and more pilgrims come from Europe to visit the Holy Land. And the maps and the travel books that they used that date from that time use the terms Holy Land, Terra Sancta, and Palestine interchangeably. So for example, Thomas Wright's book, Early Travels in Palestine, about early pilgrims that went to Palestine, and Leslie Porter's Handbook for Travelers in Syria and Palestine are examples of pilgrims that use the term Palestine for the Holy Land. And there are many, many more, but I won't bore you with that. You can read all of that in detail in the book of Nurma Salha. But not only the Christian pilgrims, even the Jewish Zionists used the term Palestine in that time. I don't know if you are aware of that famous poster that dates from the year 1936, on which you see a view of the old city of Jerusalem. There is a tree on the left of the poster, and then you look at the old city of Jerusalem with the Dome of the Rock, and there is a text in big font that says, "Visit Palestine." It's a poster that was made by the Zionist movement to encourage Jews from all over the world to come to Palestine. So even they used the name Palestine for the region. And in the British Mandate period, it was very common to see the word Palestine. They actually called it the British Mandate of Palestine. And the Palestinians who lived in Palestine received a British-issued passport that says Palestine on the front of the passport, on the cover. The name Palestine appears everywhere. On old newspapers, we can see the name Palestine on the local currency, the Palestinian pound. There are posters for the railways. It says the Palestinian Railways. Postcards that are being sent from here to family back home by tourists and pilgrims says Palestine. The stamps say Palestine. And on telegrams that were sent from that time, it says the Palestine Posts, Telegraphs and Telephones Company. So I could give a lot of more examples, but I think it is clear now that the name Palestine, that originally started in the late Bronze Age with the root letters PLST and via Peleset, Philistia, and then Palestine, and then became Philistine, it has remained the common name that was used to describe the area that Palestinians, the inhabitants of the land, consider their homeland, Palestine. And these inhabitants, the local people, they have seen empires come and go. They have had different rulers, different governors. They paid taxes to different administrations. And while all these rulers came and went, the natives, the locals, who kept working the land, who kept producing food and producing artisan work, they developed here intellectually. They had dreams and hopes. They were creating a common history, a common heritage, culture, with their own habits, with their own food tradition, their dance, their music, their embroidery, and many more aspects of their common identity. And therefore, Palestinians call themselves Palestinians in the land of Palestine. But about that topic, the identity of Palestinians, I will soon record a podcast episode with Bassem. And if you already want to listen to his podcast, you can find it wherever you listen to your podcast. And it's called Pre-Occupation, A Not-So-Short History of Palestine. Thank you for listening to this week's episode, and I will do my best to make a new episode within the next 2 weeks. Thank you for listening. Please consider supporting the podcast with a donation. It is free to listen, but there are costs involved in the production and quite a lot of time. It's very much appreciated if listeners chip in, and you can already do that with a couple of bucks on the Ko-fi page. You can find the link in the show notes, as well as other links to the social media accounts and the website. I hope you will tune in again for the next episode, every other week, a new one.